Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to the call. My name is Chris Kenny, and I'm here with Nancy Roberts, and this is the Think Pink and Grow Rich program, question and answer call. And Nancy and I are actually coming to you from the booming metropolis of
Missoula, Montana.
And,
oh.
You know, it's like a small town out in the middle of, really in the middle of nowhere, but we're surrounded by mountains. Grassy peaks, and tomorrow we're heading over to Yellowstone Park, where we're going to see some really good wildlife. We're going to see a lot of wild moose and wild buffalo and grizzly bears from a distance. And we came here for a women's conference because Nancy was speaking. So that's why we're here. We're glad all of you are with us. And what I'm going to do is go ahead and mute the lines. And then if you have a question for us, you can go ahead and hit star six. And we will certainly take that question. And I know there was a question or two emailed in that we'll be addressing as well. So hang on 1 second. Let me go ahead and mute the lines. Anything you want to add, Nia?
Keep it on.
Yep, it's on speaker now, but I'm not sure. Can everybody hear us okay if it's on speaker?
It's muted.
Oh.
So let's go ahead and take it.
All right, let's take the first question.
So go ahead and hit star six on your phone if you have a question for us. How about someone just hit star six and lets us know that the line is working?
I did. I'm Pam.
Fantastic. Thank you, Pam.
Can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
All right, okay, good, because we have the speaker on it.
Yeah, plus cell phone reception in the mountains of Montana is a little sketchy, so we just want to be careful our call doesn't drop. So do you have a question, Pam, or were you just kind enough to jump
No,
on?
I have two questions, but first you can wave to my son. He lives in Granger, Wyoming, when you get to Yellowstone. That's in the far southwestern corner of the state. You'll be in the far north. Western corner.
Yep. Yeah, I didn't know that Yellowstone was so big that it encompassed three states. I had no idea.
Oh, that makes two of us. I didn't either.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have two questions. The first one has to do with the class that you did on Tuesday. I was a little confused about the notebook you were using. You named type of notebook. Is that an online notebook or a paper notebook?
Sure. It's just a standard paper notebook. It's
okay.
A
You called it something, and I wasn't familiar with what you called it. I forget.
Did I call it a five-subject notebook?
No, it was maybe I'm getting confused. Let me go get my notes. Anyway, I'll go on to the second question until I clarify the first one.
Okay.
A while back, I talked to Chris on the phone in the winter time, and we were discussing one of my challenges as I get going really good, and then I come to a screeching halt. And I mentioned that I thought it was my deserve level, and he thought it was my old programming coming back. So I'm about to really go full speed ahead on my business, and I don't want the same thing to happen. So my question is, if it is my old programming coming back, what are some tips you can give me or steps I can take to combat that?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll take a first stab at it, and then I'll let Chris come in, okay?
Okay.
So here's the thing that's hard for us to tell people, that it will, not that it's going to happen again, but it's likely that the circumstances that cause it to happen again, for you to come to that standstill, will very definitely happen. And so I don't want you to think that we're trying to predict problems for you, but the truth of the matter is, anytime you're going to step out of your comfort zone, anytime you're going to really go for it in any area of your life, if you're challenging your old programming, you can guarantee all kinds of chaos is going to come up. And those things that have happened before, no matter what they are, if they're injury or illness or family challenges or depression or whatever it is that has stopped you in the past, circumstances will come up again that'll challenge that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we look at it more from a mindset of it shouldn't be depressing. It should be very empowering to almost like be forewarned that those things will happen. And then the antidote, the only thing to do when that happens is you press forward no matter what. Because those circumstances that get created, I don't know if Chris explained the terror barrier to you, but those
mm-hmm.
circumstances get created typically by our subconscious mind that doesn't want us to change. So when those things happen, you know, successful people, the only difference is when those kind of circumstances happen in their life, they keep going. They get sick, they keep going. You know, family pressures mount up, they find a different, you know, solution to the challenge. And the vast majority of people, when those things come up, those circumstances or challenges, they stop.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only difference.
That seems to be my modus operandi because it's happened over and over.
Mm-hmm. It's most people.
I was hoping there was some way I could kind of break through that or had some mechanisms to use to break through that so I don't stop because I don't want to stop. I need to make a significant amount of money in the next 6 months, so I don't want to stop and I can't afford to stop.
Right. So here's the good news.
But I seem to in the past.
Well, the good news is that you can break through. The good news is that you can have a different reaction or response when those circumstances come up. So the great thing here is, Pam, that you have the awareness of what's happened already. You
mm-hmm.
you know that you start to push out of your comfort zone. You know your subconscious mind freaks out and creates all kinds of crazy things in your life, and then you stop. So you have to look at it and say that when those things happen again, you have to be like, really like, you know, like a detective. Like, I know exactly what this is. I know why this is happening, and I'm not going to let it stop me. So the things that I do, this happened to me for years with weight loss, years and
uh-huh.
years loss.
Uh-huh.
I would start to lose weight. I would start to feel good. I'd get near my goal weight. Like, so, let's say I want to lose 30 pounds. I'd get down to around the 30-pound mark. People would be telling me how great I looked. I'd buy a whole new wardrobe. And here's the weird thing. Something about that subconsciously is uncomfortable. There's something
mm-hmm.
uncomfortable about me being at my healthy or ideal weight. So I would
mm-hmm.
start to sabotage and put the weight back on. What I have found to be the most effective thing for that in this last time of losing weight, which in the last 6 months I've lost 45 pounds,
mm-hmm.
is accountability outside myself. So the accountability comes in the form of my niece who kind of administers this diet that I'm on.
Mm-hmm.
Maintenance is the hardest part of any diet. And so I still am in touch with her about my eating.
Mm-hmm.
I let her know that I slipped back and started to gain weight.
mm-hmm.
I got coaching from her. I told Chris that on this particular trip that we're on, that I wanted to stay in like cleanse mode, which is a term of this diet, until
mm-hmm.
A certain day, so that now I have this, like, external pressure. I know Chris is sort of, you know, not that he would probably get on my case if I didn't, but now I know somebody else is watching my habits, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? So it's
right.
a lot for me to slip up because I have that external accountability. So for what I would say is put something in place, put a coach in place, put your director in place, and let them know that this is your tendency. When I start to go this way, you know, I stop. I'll end up not showing up to meetings, or I won't make my calls or whatever. And I'm giving you permission to hold me accountable when you see that behavior in me.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes. And I have the same diet thing going on that you do.
Yeah. Oh, <that's> very,
relate
very
to that, no problem.
Yeah. Well, it's a very common challenge for people, and they never
mm-hmm.
understand why they lose weight and they feel so good about themselves and then gain it back. And once
mm-hmm.
you understand the terror barrier model and how your subconscious is really in control of 96
mm-hmm.
to 90% of your behavior, it makes so much sense.
So there is a way to get it out of control, right? The subconscious.
Yeah. Yep, the way to stop it from controlling or running you is two different ways. One, put external things in place that will keep you going. So external accountability, me, that's the number one way. And then to keep working on reprogramming your subconscious.
The thing that I would do is I would think back to the last time it happened, and I would think about the last time it happened, and I would think about what you stopped doing when it happened. In other words, you were pushing forward, and then there were things that all of a sudden you started resisting doing. I would make a list of, I would make a list of the things that you were resisting doing, so that you're very conscious. So you're very conscious of what you stopped doing. And I would look at that list on a daily basis. And if you see yourself starting to stop doing those things again, you have to have the consciousness and the awareness that in that moment you're actually going to make a different decision and you're going to push forward.
Okay.
So it's knowing that you're at that moment where you normally stop. Have be being conscious, this is where I normally stop. Because what will happen is, as Nancy said, the subconscious mind will trigger a lot of rationalization. Things are okay. I made a lot of calls yesterday. I don't need to make calls today. I had a busy week last week. I don't have to have a busy week this week. You know, I'll make it up on Saturday when I do my calls. I ate healthy yesterday. I don't have to eat healthy today. So all these rationalizations will get triggered. And, you know, your biggest weapon against that is the awareness of what's happening. Because then when you have the awareness, you know what, at the end of it all, you have to be willing to do something different. And I can give everybody all the tools to bring into their awareness what they're doing and why it's happening. But ultimately, you have to make a different decision. It's your decision. We can't stand next to you and make you pick up the phone and continue to do booking. You have to make a different decision.
Okay.
Well, that... the magic bullet is you have to make a different choice.
Right.
You have to recognize it in yourself, and when that moment comes, you have to make a different choice, and the choice is to stay in action.
Okay. Well, that, all that helps quite a bit, so I will.
And I'm going to add one little more piece because I'm going to relate it to weight loss because I think it's really applicable. One thing that helped me this time, besides the outside accountability to my niece about my weight, you know, slipping in my habits. And I know for me, one thing that I stopped doing when I started to gain the weight back is I stopped getting on the scale every day because that's a great way to go into denial, right? I just stopped measuring, right? And then you get on it 6 months later and lo and behold, the 30 pounds are back. So one, I, you know, made sure that my niece knew exactly how much weight I had gained back. And the second thing I did was, she had taken pictures of me beforehand, before I lost the 45 pounds, in the middle at around the 20, 25-pound mark, and then at the end when I'd lost the 45. And so when she and I talked, she said, you need to go back and look at your before photos. And I hate looking at them, Pam. They're so awful. I mean, seriously, I want to cry when I see them. So you know that whole thing about put the picture of yourself at your ideal weight or your thin weight or whatever on your refrigerator? Baloney. Don't put that there. Put a horrible picture of yourself on the refrigerator. Because when you see that reminder of where you don't want to be, it's actually more motivating to move away from it. So I did. I went and I looked long and hard at what I call the fat pictures, and I was so upset. I said, I can't believe that for a piece of bread, I'm willing to go back and look like that. And every time I start to... What?
It's the moving away from pain thing.
Exactly. It's what we always say, it's more motivating to move away from pain than toward pleasure. So for whatever reason, you need to make money in this next month, whatever the situation is, it's become dire. I actually want you to think about that when you stop picking up the phone. I want you to think about what's going to happen if you don't get that money in 6 months.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you. That's, I think, going to be a big help, everything that you both said.
Good. Well, we're glad. And did you find your question about the notebook, or is it kind of irrelevant?
No,
now?
I think that just knowing that it wasn't an electronic one, like something through, it sounded like it was through one of the computer driver things.
It's just one of one of those spiral notebooks that you can get at any store, and they've got them.
That's my speed.
Okay, yeah. I like I said, when I found out that this multimillionaire used it to run her business, I was thrilled to hear it.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
So do I star six to mute myself back out?
Correct. Yep. Go ahead and
hit
star six.
All right.
Thanks, Pam. And so if anyone else has a question, go ahead and hit star six.
Hi, guys. This is Karina.
Hi, Karina.
Hello.
Hey there. A question where you guys were talking about, I think Chris was the one leading the call about recruiting or interviewing, and mostly the scenarios relate around money. But my question is, when you have the firm view, but there are a couple, especially on my team, so it's relevant to me, the ones that actually don't come in for money, truly don't, that need it for just personal reason, you know, oftentimes there's not really that money motivator, so you can't talk to them so much about making money or coming for training to make sure that they're able to make that goal, whatever that money goal was at the beginning of the conversation. So when they're coming in for something like building self-confidence or just network, like girlfriend time, usually it's self-esteem issues, I guess. What do you do? What kind of second and third level questions would you ask to spur them into action a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, the first question is how do you know that they're coming in for self-esteem issues?
When they say, I want this for me, and then I ask, what do you mean? Oh, I just want it for girlfriend time. They don't say self-esteem issues, but most of us as women, we have issues, I think, related to self-confidence and self-esteem, and that's kind of the unsaid. This is just my experience as being a consultant for 3 years.
The second level question for that is, if you're wanting girlfriend time, you want to ask, how is not having girlfriend time right now impacting your life?
So just kind of creating that lack with anything.
Yeah,
that
it's creating it's the pain around it. What's the what's the inconvenience that's being created for you because you don't have enough girlfriend time? How's that impacting you? How is it impacting your life? What's it going to be like going forward if you continue not to have enough girlfriend time? So the question's going to really be in the same. You just want them to start to think forward about what's going to happen if they don't start to get more of this and how not having more of it is impacting them now.
Okay.
Because that'll create a sense of urgency to sign on and sign on right away.
Okay. Great.
Awesome. Simple answer.
Mm-hmm.
A good question. Okay. Anybody else who has a question, you can go ahead and press star six, and we will do our best to answer that for you.
We have a question that was emailed to us. This question comes from Edwina, so hopefully she'll hear this answer on the recording. And Edwina, we miss you, so hopefully you can make the next call. So basically her question was, when I shared on Tuesday about working outside the home and working at Starbucks, her question was, what is it that you work on at Starbucks? And so my thought is, maybe she's trying to figure out what type of work would be most productive to do there that you wouldn't need to be home in your home office for. So because my work's a little bit different than the typical Mary Kay business owner, I'll just share with you what it is that I work on and then see if you can translate it to your business. If you can't, anybody listening want to jump on the call and ask me specific questions, I'll let you know how I think you would do it. So first of all, I actually have done phone calls from Starbucks, but from the parking lot. If it's a nice day, I'll sit outside. If it's not so nice, I'll actually sit in my car because making phone calls from home is sometimes tough. If you're somebody who procrastinates making your calls,
and getting out of the house tends to get you more motivation, then I would suggest taking your list of people to call and go to Starbucks and make 10 calls. Let's say that's your goal. And when you reach that goal, go in and get yourself a latte or an iced tea or, you know, frappuccino or something like that. Use it as a reward. But typically what I do at Starbucks is I have to do a lot of creation for our business. I create a lot of content, meaning like the content that goes into these calls, content that goes into our training programs, and I do the marketing in our business. So I have to write a lot of emails, ads, speeches, all kinds of things. And what I find is at home I can answer emails and do kind of like the just little tasks, you know, kind of the buffer stuff I talked about the other night. But when I really need to be creative or I really need to be productive, that's when it's much better for me to be at Starbucks. So if you wanted to take your laptop and answer emails at Starbucks, or if you were going to work on a newsletter to send out to your team, or if you had to create content for a meeting, you know, some training coming up, you can do all that. You know, if you have a laptop, a portable laptop, you can do all of that from Starbucks. But probably the biggest thing is if your phone calls aren't getting, if you're just not getting to them at home, I would recommend doing those from a Starbucks parking lot or any parking lot, obviously, or any coffee shop. So, Edwin, I hope that helps clarify what the kind of work is that I do at Starbucks. And also, like I said the other night, when I go and have appointments, I also have them back-to-back. So typically what I'll do is, you know, go to Starbucks in the morning, work for a couple hours, then have some either coaching calls or appointments there and have people come there almost like it's my office. It's quite funny. But I just find I'm so much more productive when I'm out and about than when I'm home. So I hope that answered your question. Okay, if anybody else has a question, go ahead and hit star 6.
I have another question, Nancy.
Sure.
It's Colleen again. When you were talking before about outrageous target and minimum goals,
yes.
I guess my struggle or my challenge is sometimes I set goals that I think are appropriate and things that I could stretch for, and then other times it's back to the subconscious, like I'm just not actually doing that day-to-day consistency. So when I was coaching one of my team members, I realized that I was putting kind of lofty goals, and she wasn't even making one phone call. So I went back to coaching her to say, are you good enough to make one call? And actually, it's been really, really effective, and she's been feeling super great. So now that she's doing one call a day, I mean, at what point do you, I don't know if it's a systematic way of doing it, but how do you decide to move on and move forward? For me, one call would never cut it, but at the same time, I'm like terrified when I stood up there and I heard that somebody was making 100 dials. I know Chris has done that before too in one day. I mean, I'm so far from 100 and I'm so far from one. Like, I don't know what to pick as minimum and target in our outrageous goals. Does that make sense?
It does. And And it's a good question, because what you want to do is you want to make sure you're not setting goals that are so easy that they're not motivating to reach for, but also not so big that they're paralyzing you. And that's exactly what the minimum target and outrageous goal setting system is for. So let me explain each of the categories, and then you can fill in the numbers for yourself, and everybody else on the line can do it too. So the minimum goal that you set is a goal that you likely have reached before. Okay, so you have a pretty good shot of hitting it. Because what we're trying to do with goal setting is, because people have a history of setting goals and missing them, setting goals and missing them. So we're actually trying to build some confidence around it. So we want that first goal to be actually easily attainable. So pick something you've done before. For the woman who wasn't even doing one call, then one call was perfect for a minimum goal for her.
For how long, I guess. The second part of that would be, like, how long does she stay there at one call?
Well, I would have her pick minimum, target, and outrageous. And let's say she said target was 2. Let's be really low. And then she said outrageous was 3. I would keep that probably for a couple weeks and see if at any point, whatever she does, you're celebrating, right, no matter what, they're hitting –
Mm-hmm. If they're hitting their minimum, you celebrate with them. And then you ask them, are you ready to raise the goal? Do you want to set it up to, you know, 3, 4, and 5 or 3, 5, and 7 or whatever it is? So I would have them hit the goal a couple times so you can celebrate with them.
Have her ask the question, am I good enough to make one call after every call?
Yeah, the interesting thing was, I'm going to piggyback that comment with, that's exactly what I was doing, because I thought, yeah, when I first started, I wasn't really trying to say that again. You know, I got myself out of that. But thankfully, I went back and thought, no, I really do need to do this for every single call. So then she made like 17 calls the next day, and I think she's on this high. And that happens to me too. So I guess that question is for both of us. You know, she's new, I'm not. But we both go to that point where we can do it. We know we can. We have that, what is it? I don't know. You're like on a roll, really. Mm-hmm. And then you don't do this next day. So it's like a roller coaster, because I know that she and I have made X number of calls. So for her, it was 17. For me, it's been like 50. Let's say that was my top. But the next day, there's no way I've done 50 calls. So how do you avoid that?
I would probably set the calls on a weekly basis rather than a daily basis.
Okay.
That's the first thing I do, set the goal for a weekly number of calls. And then the target is what you think you can do or what you really want to do, but it's a stretch for you. So you know other people have done it. It's not unrealistic. But for you, because you've never hit it, it is a bit of a stretch. So if you've done 50, then I would say, you know, 60 or 70 is a target for you, and it's a stretch for you. If she's done 17, then maybe her next target is 20. And then I always say that outrageous is that dream. It's like the dream, you know. And if everything was in alignment, and God was on your side that day, he's on your side every day. But if everything was clicking, everything was working, you'd hit your outrageous. And sometimes what happens, like you've seen, the momentum actually takes us to the outrageous goal. And so Chris and I, what we used to do is we used to set a different reward for each level. You know, if we hit our minimum, we got a latte. If we hit our target, we got a massage. If we hit our outrageous, we actually booked a weekend in a B&B, something like that. So does that help?
Oh, very much so. And I like the different reward systems. I think that's powerful, because I was thinking, you know what, for me to make booking calls, I do have to go to the car. I have to physically get out of my space, because I won't make those calls, and I'm more productive in the car. It never took it to the level of going to the Starbucks, because if you want the Starbucks, then you really are making the effort by staying right there, real focused. So I like that. I like the different reward systems. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, anyone else have a question? Just go ahead and hit star 6. Anyone want to ask a question? Just go ahead and hit star 6. Okay, well, I guess we won't wait. Basically, you know how it works. If you have any questions in the next couple of weeks or before our next Q&A call, go ahead and send us an email. Even when we're on the road in Montana, we can always respond to email. And if you haven't had a coaching session with Chris or I yet in the program, or it's been a while, it's a good month to do it, especially if you're still reaching to hit a goal. So go ahead and click on the link to our calendars when you get an email. But we're here for you. So we're thinking of you as you are wrapping up the seminar year and, you know, stretching and reaching to hit those goals. And, you know, we're thinking about you, and we want it for you sometimes almost more than you want it for you. So anything else you want to add?
No, not really. Just keep your eye on the ball. Focus on your activity. Throughout the month. Again, it all comes down to making calls.
So make a commitment, do something you've never done this month, and you'll get some results you've never had.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you, everyone. Have a good night.